You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hi, welcome to today's episode of the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I'm Grant Goldberg of the Locked On Seahawks podcast and Forum Blue and Gold, and I'm joined by Spike Friedman. Spike, what is going on?
Not much. Pretty hyped about some big Seahawks moves that have happened today. You let me know about a C.J. Smith trade.
Yeah,
I didn't even know who C.J. Smith was, and he's gone too soon. So that's got me pretty hyped. The D.J. Fluker signing has me pretty hyped. I'm just hyped. I'm just always hyped, guys.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, big free agency stuff. Like, literally big. D.J. Fluker's a pretty big guy. He's 340 pounds.
Oh, boy.
But not to take away from what should be a very good show, we have a very special guest. He's been on the show before. We have the Ringer's Danny Kelly. Danny, what's going on?
Oh, you know, just a pretty normal Tuesday, talking about Tom Cable offensive lineman on Twitter and things of that nature. So, yeah.
Yeah, Crab Rangoon, Tom Cable, things of that nature. Danny, how do you feel about Tom Cable's influence on the Seahawks 3 months after his firing?
Well, I mean, I think the D.J. Fluker thing, he looks a lot like a Tom Cable offensive lineman, so I think there's maybe some PTSD happening with Seahawks fans right now, or maybe, I think it's, and I've kind of been on record about this for a long time, like, obviously the team, I'm sure, took into account what Cable wanted in his offensive line players, like size, weight, style, all that, but I mean, they do have a full-time staff of scouts working on the draft all year round who evaluate also, and John Schneider and Pete Carroll are the ones that actually make the picks. So I don't know, just the idea that like Tom Cable was picking his linemen out of, you know, like the 1 month that he does off at, you know, draft work out of the year, it just seems silly to me. Obviously he's involved, but I think there's more to the Seahawks evaluation of offensive line players than just what Tom Cable wants.
I feel like they're gonna like walk back into the office after the signing and realize, wait, like Pete Carroll's not on, I mean Tom Cable isn't with the team anymore. Like, we don't have to put these guys on the roster.
Damn, Mike Solari's just furious right now.
Like, it's like when like someone like makes a new, like has a new relationship but like can't get over their ex. This is what the Seahawks are doing right now.
I like the idea that John Schneider hasn't changed the offensive line coach contact in his phone. Just texting evaluations to the wrong guy. Speaking of John Schneider and Pete Carroll, obviously this has been a tumultuous offseason to this point. And Danny, I just want to get how you feel as someone who I think has had your finger on the pulse of this era of the Seahawks. This has felt to me as like maybe not the best of off seasons. How do you feel about how all of these transactions have stacked up and gone for the team?
Well, I think overall it's just, you know, it's a reset year, it's a reset off season, and so it's gonna look bad probably, you know, just like on paper. You know, they're not really going out into big name free agency. They've, for the most part, I mean, we'll see what happens with Sue, but for the most part, they've kind of ignored most of the big names that were on the free agent market, and that all happened really, really quickly, and you didn't hear the Seahawks really do anything for the first week or so, and so now we're into, I guess, the second week of free agency, and you start to see some stuff trickle in, but overall, you know, there was, you know, Bill Barnwell tweeted it, a couple prominent NFL national guys were talking about, you know, just like the in versus out on the Seahawks roster, it looks bad. I mean, obviously you lose Jimmy Graham, you lose, you know, Sheldon Richardson, some bigger name free agents, a lot of guys are gone, and obviously Michael Bennett and, you know, potentially Cam Chancellor, or Cliff Avril, all these guys are gone, and they bring in, like you're talking about, C.J. Smith, which sounds like a made up name.
It's a Madden generated player.
Right. So, I mean, overall, like, it doesn't, I don't think it, like, looks good on paper, but at the same time, I do like kind of the idea of them getting younger and you know, getting back to sort of their roots in terms of playing young players and playing guys on their first contracts and finding, you know, low-level free agents from the CFL or whatever, you know, like kind of finding gems and fitting them into their scheme. And I kind of like the idea of them sort of resetting and getting back to what made them such a good team in the first place. Of course, at the same time, you're getting rid of tons and tons of really talented players. So how this will work is unclear, and it could be kind of ugly from the start, like in the first season. So I don't know. We'll see. I think right now, though, Carroll is kind of just trying to reset. And I do think there is something to what Sherman was saying the other day about how, you know, some of these veteran guys, Carroll might work better in a college system because he's got players cycling in and out, and, you know, the veteran guys maybe kind of tune him out. You know, that's something that Doug Baldwin's gone on record saying too, like, you know, at some point you just kind of tune out. It's the same story over and over with Carroll. And so who knows, maybe the influx of young guys and hungry guys and people that ever have are sort of new to the Carroll indoctrination of, you know, Seahawks football or whatever, maybe that'll make an impact. So I'm kind of just going into this off season with an open mind, but yeah, I mean, on paper, it doesn't look great, but overall I'm kind of hopeful that it'll sort of reset the identity, I guess, of the team.
Right. It seems like they're going to have to, you know, add some younger guys to buy into Pete Carroll's system, like you were just saying. And, you know, if it's going to go to plan, it seems like they're taking a couple steps back to take a leap forward. And so, like you said, we're going to have an open mind. It's going to look a lot different in Seattle this year. And on paper, it kind of seems like the Seahawks are going to take a step back, just given how the NFC as a whole is getting better too. And right. So we're gonna see probably a little bit more of a gap between the Seahawks and the rest of the contenders in the NFC.
Yeah, I mean, just even in the division, it seems like the power structure is all out of whack now. But I mean, at the same time, Russell Wilson's still on the team, obviously Bobby Wagner's still in the middle. You got Earl Thomas in theory. Hopefully he doesn't get traded.
Yes.
It remains
the firm position of the Locked On Seahawks podcast that the only player that we will accept in a trade for Earl Thomas is Earl Thomas, and ideally a pick as well. But if we just go straight up Earl Thomas for Earl Thomas, we will accept that trade.
Yeah, I hope that doesn't happen, because then I think it is a lot more of a major step down if they do end up doing that, you know, kind of like a much major reset. But I mean, you still have the foundation, right?
Yeah, you look at the irreplaceable talent on the team, and as good as Richard Sherman is, that sort of man corner position is replaceable in that you get a guy who's 90% as good as Sherman and you get 90% of their production, whereas 90% of Earl Thomas completely changes the scheme. Yeah. Same with Bobby Wagner, versus like Michael Bennett, where there are guys who can do that hybrid DE/DT sort of role. Like, so on the one hand, it's all doom and gloom, but on the other hand, like you're saying, you've got a small cadre of all pros. The all pros and Pro Bowl caliber guys who have left or gotten hurt are of the more replaceable variety than the guys who remain. The last two draft classes are not as dire as the previous two. Right. So hopefully those guys can step up, and this could just as easily be a 9-10 win team as a 6-8 win team, as I think people are sort of fearing on the downside.
Right. I'm basically on the same page as you on that stuff. I mean, it's just, you have a franchise quarterback, you've got Doug Baldwin, a top tier receiver. I mean, we'll see what the coaching shakeup does and how that changes everything. I mean, there's just so many like variables going on right now that I really have no idea what to expect, other than I do think they will stay competitive. I don't know what competitive means, whether it's, like you said, it's 6-8 wins or 9-10 wins, but I don't think they're, you know, like a rebuilding, quote, rebuilding team at this point. I still think they still have a core, you know, like a nucleus of players to compete. So I don't know. I'm just kind of looking at this offseason with an open mind, and you know, if they can get their run game back and kind of get back to what Pete Carroll wants to do on defense and I don't know. Maybe if there is a bit of a culture change, it might make a big difference. I'm kind of maybe a stronger believer in like locker room culture and some of that, you know, intangible crap that a lot of people make fun of on Twitter. I'm kind of a bigger believer in that than I think some people. So, you know, maybe that is going to be a big factor, but obviously you have to have talent on the field. So I guess we'll just kind of have to see. It's going to be, you know, I guess worst case is going to be interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's take a quick break. We'll be back with more Locked On Seahawks and Danny Kelly after this. And I'm going to drop a white hot take on you, Danny, and just immediately get your reaction.
All right.
It's not actually that hot, but we'll be back right after this.
Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. You're still with Grant, Spike, and Danny Kelly of The Ringer. And when we last left you, Spike was teasing his hot take where Danny's at the edge of his seat. He was saying, I'm at the edge of my seat. Granted, it's not a very big seat, so I'm at the edge of it. Spike, what is this take?
I'm not 100% sure I believe this, but I think right now, when you look at what the team is going to has sort of left to add, after the Fluker signing today, my white hot take is that the offensive line is in better shape than the defensive line by a significant margin. Whoa. And looks to me to be fine. That's my white hot take. The offensive line is fine and in better shape than the defensive line. And it's just going across it. I'm like, Dwayne Brown is good. Justin Britt is good. Posick is fine. Fant could be something. Fluker is maybe, you know, like, and we don't have Tom Cable anymore. I'm like, there's hope here. And then I look at the defensive line, and I'm like, man, no Cliff Avril, no Michael Bennett. Yeah, I feel like people are underrating Jaron Reed.
No Sheldon Richardson.
No Sheldon Richardson. This is what I'm saying. I am standing by. I'm getting myself in a lather. Guys, am I crazy that the offensive line is, after today, maybe in better shape than the defensive line in terms of what needs to be added this offseason?
In your mind, what is the, from left to right, what's the starting line going to look like?
I'm thinking Brown. Are they going to flip Posick? I guess probably. Brown, Fluker, Britt, Posick. This is hopeful. This is so hopeful. But I'm like a good Fant at tackle.
Yeah.
Or a mentally rebuilt of Fatty. Like one of them, but better than either of them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean,
okay.
Like,
and I'm excited about that, and I'm also excited about the potential for them to incorporate more power and stuff into their into their offensive line, because I kind of just, I don't know, man, their wide zone stuff, like, it worked a couple of years ago when they were doing a lot of read option and stuff like that, but it just looks like such a cluster every time they try and block and run. It's like there's three guys coming through the line every single time.
Defensive tackles are fast now.
Yeah.
I don't know if, like, we got the memo, but, like, Aaron Donald's real fast, and he is not unique.
To me, it seemed like, and maybe this is the reason Cable ultimately got fired, but to me, it really felt like for the last 2 years, they were just consistently asking their offensive linemen to make blocks that they couldn't make.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's as simple as that. I mean, and if you hear Pete Carroll, like, I've read some of his defensive, you know, when he does clinics and stuff like that with coaches, and one of his big tenets is always, don't ask, and this is mostly what, he's a defensive guy, like, don't ask your defensive player to do something that he can't do.
Yeah.
And it always felt to me like, okay, you're asking this guy to reach block Aaron Donald. Like,
yeah.
What do you think is going to happen?
People are going to die. That's like, we saw what happened. Like,
so, I mean, it depends on the scale. It depends on the scale that we're looking at the game on. But, like, if we're judging the game by how many people died, Tom Cable did a pretty good job. But and every other metric was just so bad.
For our running backs in the red zone last year.
Like, 0 yards. Crazy. Yeah.
That's crazy. Anyway, yeah.
Guys, I'm a little hot. But I think the flip side of that take is I'm worried about the defensive line. Danny, when you look at the composition of the defensive line right now, how do you feel about it as it stands now? And do you think that that is where potentially the Seahawks go early in the draft?
I think it's worrisome to look at the group of defensive linemen and figure out where the sacks are going to come from. Because I have absolute faith in Carroll to build a defensive line that's going to be really good against the run. Like, I can't remember, you know, there's been short stretches where they've given up yards, but I can't remember the last Seahawks defensive line that wasn't good against the run. They just find these veteran guys that can come in and play the run really, really well, and then they've got a couple of good young guys that do that.
Yeah, exactly. Nas Jones, Jaren Reed, both great against the run.
Yeah, so I'm not worried about that whatsoever. What I am worried about is, can you get from Deion Jordan, because we saw flashes in really small, you know, sample size or whatever, that he was a good pass rusher, but can you expect him to do that all year? Are they planning on relying on him to do that all year? You know, I can't say I know really what to expect from guys like, you know, Brandon Jackson or Quentin Jefferson and obviously Malik McDowell is a total question mark at this point. So to me, I'm just wondering, where are the sacks going to come from? Where are they going to get sacks? Are they going to have to blitz the hell out of defense, and that's not really their style to get to the pressure, to get pressure on the quarterback, or what? Because, I mean, you're losing Sheldon Richardson, Cliff Avril, and Michael Bennett. So
that's a lot.
That's a lot.
Yeah, I feel like it's tough for me to put a lot of faith in Deion Jordan right now, and the Seahawks clearly have, obviously, because, yeah, he had a good year in the time that he played, but he also spent a lot of time, you know, on the sideline injured, and it's a very, very small sample size that, you know, we're going off of with his good play, because we saw his career in Miami or lack thereof, and so like we have to see if he can sustain this, you know, when he's on the field. So he's got to stay healthy, and he's got to assume a bigger role.
Yeah, I mean, there's still time, and yeah. I don't know, like, if they go get a couple of pass rushers in the draft or whatever, you know, there's probably going to hit cap casualties at some point, if there are any more later in the season, or later in the offseason, I should say. And so there's still a lot that can happen, but I'm kind of with you, Spike. Like, I don't know, like, where are the sacks going to come from? That's my main question with the defense, because, again, They're set at linebacker for the most part, in terms of as long as Wagner and Wright can stay healthy. And then I like the young core of cornerbacks. I think they should re-sign Byron Maxwell.
Totally agree.
Locked on Seahawks stance. Sign Byron Maxwell.
And honestly, if we keep Earl, I think we, you know, and McDougal's a great strong safety, or great as strong. He's a very good strong safety. Right. And then the depth behind him, I feel like one of these young safeties is going to hit. And so I'm not, like, when I look at it, I think you're right to specify that it is edge pass rushing right now. I think Nas or Jaren could develop into an interior pass rusher, but that edge, like that bend the edge thing, we've never drafted that well. I mean, we went out and got those guys, whether it was Chris Clemens or Cliff Avril. We had to go and buy that guy. And I don't think Barkevius Mingo's that guy for a bunch of reasons.
No. I see Mingo playing almost exactly what Bruce Irvin did.
Yeah.
You know, where half the time he's dropping back into the whatever, the hook flat zone or whatever it is. And, you know, he's kind of rangy, speedy. He can play the run. I think he does have, you know, utility in the defense, but yeah, he's not going to be like, I don't think they're going to rely on him to be a pass rusher. I think he could rush the passer in certain situations, which he did last year. Again, in a small sample size, it was good, but I mean, if you're relying on several guys, small sample sizes from last year, and kind of project that forward to next year, that could be kind of scary to me. So maybe Frank Clark has a huge breakout year. I don't know if I really trust that. I think we're kind of seeing we've seen pretty much like what he can be.
I mean
obviously he might get double digit sacks, which is great, but I don't know if he's necessarily like a dominant pass rusher, so it's kind of interesting.
And I think losing Michael Bennett kind of hurts the whole defensive line. I've said on this podcast, you know, ever since there was talks about Bennett leaving, that, you know, they're losing almost a coach on the field and a guy that, you know, has so much knowledge and on how to play each position on the defensive line and has so much utility. And so I don't think that, I mean, like, it would have been great to see, you know, Frank Clark take another step. And I think it would have been easier for him to do that if Michael Bennett is on the field opposite sides of him.
Yeah. Bennett played a ton of snaps too.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was over 80%, right?
Which is crazy. So where, again, where are they going to get these snaps? I guess, it's just going to look really different. It's going to be a lot of young guys.
Snaps and sacks, where do they come from this year? We're going to have to see.
That's my favorite Insane Clown Posse song. All right, yeah, let's take another break. Let's come back, and on this subject, let's talk about some of the guys the Seahawks might go after round one with what is currently a pick in the late teens, and will clearly become a pick in the mid to late 20s. This is Locked On Seahawks, and we'll be back right after this.
We are back with the final portion of today's episode of the Locked On Seahawks podcast. And before we left you, we talked about some guys that, you know, were on the defensive line, and we don't really know where the snaps and the sacks are going to come from. And so with this next segment, we might get a little better of an idea of that. Now, Danny's going to help us, you know, zero in on some guys that the Seahawks might have their eyes on in the first round with pick number 18. So, Danny, who do you think would be a good fit for the Seahawks at that pick?
Well, the two kind of positions that I've really mostly been paying close attention to are the offensive line and some sort of defensive line, whether it's pass rusher or, interior kind of three technique type player. And again, I agree with you guys. I think it's almost a certainty at this point that they'll move back, try and pick up a second, third round pick or whatever, because, I mean, number one, I think the draft is pretty deep at those areas. And I think they probably need to add a contributor, like a first-year contributor or two in this draft. So it just makes a lot of sense for them to trade back, even if they like the guy at 18 or whatever. It just makes sense to, recoup some stuff, recoup some picks and basically fill out their roster. A couple guys, I think, on the offensive line that are interesting are Isaiah Wynn from Georgia. You know, he played tackle there, but he's probably a guard at the next level just because he's a little bit on the short side. And he's kind of known as a technically proficient pass protector, which I think they could use. Obviously, DJ Fluker is, based on all the Pro Football Focus kind of metrics and stats and everything, he's just a much better run blocker than he is a pass blocker. In fact, he's really bad at pass blocking. So getting someone in that would compete with him, I think you got to look at most of the free agents signed right now are draft hedges. And so that's been a theme the Seahawks have had, basically this whole time Pete Carroll and John Schneider have been here. They sign free agent, like middle to low level free agents, to compete with their upcoming draft picks for spots. And we'll see what the, guaranteed money for Fluker is and all that. But I mean, we don't have to necessarily assume that he slots in as a starter. I think that if they get a guy in the draft, like a Will Hernandez or an Isaiah Wynn or whoever it is, Billy Price from Ohio State. There's a couple of tackles that are pretty athletic, I think, that they could be interested in. Brian O'Neill from Pittsburgh and Tyrell Crosby, Colton Miller. Some of those guys that kind of, it's the Seahawks thing. It kind of offer positional versatility. I think those are some guys they'll probably take a look at. On the defensive line, I think you kind of have to look at the types of players they've preferred over the last couple of years. If Maurice Hurst gets his heart condition screened, like if he gets to go ahead to play, he's the kind of guy that I think they'd probably be interested in. Marcus Davenport, he's a raw pass rusher, but he fits the bill in terms of size and athleticism. I don't know, there's some borderline first rounders that are probably you want to keep an eye on, just because they'll probably be moving back. So like Taven Bryan is another guy who's an interior sort of three tech, but he could maybe play on the outside. Very, very athletic kind of guy. And so like maybe like an Arden Key. I don't know, because I don't think they're going to get a premier pass rusher where they are. And I think certainly not when they move back. So it's got to be kind of like a developmental guy, I feel like. And some of these players probably have red flags, but a lot of young pass rushers do. So you just kind of have to deal with that.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I don't watch a ton of college football anymore because I'm a hero and I don't like to watch players pay for no money. I'm a hero of socialism.
Thank you for your service, but, Spike.
Yep, and Arden Key was not on my register, so I Googled him while you were talking. And the top headline is Detroit Lions suspend day with controversial LSU password. I can't wait to see why that is. I'm sure it's something great.
Well, the thing with Key, I think, is
He left.
There's probably off-field stuff, but I mean, he's like prototypical size in terms of he's really long and athletic, but he didn't have a ton of production. He was really hot and cold in terms of, I guess, his production and all that. And so he's the kind of guy where you're like, oh, he looks like he could be really good. But
his weight has fluctuated by 40 pounds a year. As someone who understands what that is, but is not a professional athlete, let me just say, 40 extra pounds will sap your explosiveness trying to get after a Jimmy Garoppolo, if you will. A world-class athlete like Jimmy Garoppolo or Jared Goff. Really interesting. That's all really interesting. And I think you're right that I think it's a great observation that they do hedge that position, and it goes back to the idea of churning sort of any open position on the roster. I've told you off the air, and I think I mentioned it on this podcast, that I still love a piece you wrote about when they were looking for Russell Wilson and the way that they were churning the QB position in the post-Matt Hasselbeck era.
Right.
And similarly, watching them apply that philosophy to other positions, is there any way you think, I mean, they haven't brought in a veteran running back to this point, and that's obviously a question. Do you think that they target a running back in those first few rounds if they can pick up an extra pick or two?
Yeah, I do. I definitely do. This is a pretty deep class, I think most people would consider it, and I think there's some really interesting, really athletic guys. Like, and it really depends on kind of what they're looking for. I think the Seahawks, generally speaking, have liked heavier guys, like 220 pounds, and there's a lot of guys kind of that fit that mold, whether it's Rashad Penny, Nick Chubb. I mean, even a guy like Bo Scarborough, who is, I think, probably stiffer than you want in terms of his running style and more upright than you want in terms of running style, but he's really physical, and I could see Pete Carroll liking him because he's really, really fast and physical, and he'll run people over in general. I don't know if he's necessarily like the most physical guy, but he's just imposing big dude who can run fast, which is kind of what Chris Carson was in college. And so I don't know. There's a lot of options, I think, in the running back class. And I think this is another interesting thing. I was, you know, talking to Davis Sue about this recently. The Seahawks don't have a ton of guys on their roster right now, which it's a little bit.
I just saw he tweeted that post draft there will be like potentially as many as 20 open roster slots.
Wow. Yeah. And so we were kind of trying to figure out, you know, we're thinking like this is obviously this means something, that it's obviously some sort of strategy that they're going through. And I think it could have something to do with they've really kind of fallen off in their ability to recruit undrafted free agents, which I think was a huge part of how they built their roster in the first few years under Pete Carroll, when, you know, they were rebuilding their rosters. So obviously there was more open spots and there just wasn't as many good veteran guys that had taken up the spots. But I think if you're an agent, put yourself in an agent's shoes and after the draft is over, say, well, the Seahawks have, you know, two guys listed here or whatever. It's unclear what they're doing on their offensive line here, or they're, you know, there's really a lot of openings. It's also kind of worrisome about the Seahawks roster in general when you start saying it like this, but like they don't have a true number three receiver or whatever, you know? So if you're an agent, you're like, okay, well, I want to get, like, my path to money is getting my player on a team. And so I'm going to choose to send him or to convince him to go, you know, to a team that, he has a chance to make the roster and get paid, and so I get paid. So I think, you know, that has something to do with maybe their undrafted free agent, you know, recruitment or whatever, because maybe their pamphlet's not working quite as strong as it used to.
We see that the roster's so bare, and as it stands right now, what, they only have like 8 draft picks, and so we're probably going to see them trade back in the first round. And then probably, I mean, I'd at least make one more trade in the draft just to fill out that roster a little more going into training camp. And Terrell Pryor left without a visit, without a contract, so that wide receiver spot is still open. Alan Hearns was just released, so, you know, maybe they'll take a look at him. But I don't know, it feels like they might go receiver in the draft, but they've had success not going wide receiver in the draft and then just signing people. So, like you said, they're going to need to kind of get their charm back in persuading these undrafted guys to come. And one way for that to happen is them keeping that spot open to get more eyes on them.
Yeah. So I don't know if that has anything to do with it. I think they're probably, you know, what Davis was tweeting is like, instead of giving a guy like Mike Davis $100K signing bonus right now, like they're just basically going to leave that spot open and fill it later with either what ends up being a roster cut during the summer or during roster cutdowns or an undrafted free agent or a potential trade target that they like, kind of like the thing that had just happened with the Browns where they identify a guy and they give up like a conditional seventh rounder to pick him up. So I don't know. It's just kind of an interesting thing to keep tabs on. I don't know exactly what it means. That my hunch is it's something to do with undrafted free agents and getting their mojo back on recruiting those guys. But yeah, I mean, it's there's kind of like a feel returning of the whole roster churn era, kind of, you know, going and basically relying on a lot of these young guys to make plays and stuff like that. So it, there's some excitement to that, but there's also tons of, you know, obviously uncertainty and trepidation as to whether these guys can play or not. So kind of an interesting time to be a fan. I think my whole career in terms of writing about the Seahawks has been them being pretty good team. So this is kind of a fun, obviously maybe I'm a masochist, but it's kind of fun to think about them being sort of uncertain.
It's uncharted territory for you.
Right.
Well, it's also bungee jumping rather than like free diving because of Russell Wilson and Bobby Wagner and the fact that we're getting all those comp picks next year and we're going to have a ton of cap space next year. That like bounce back is coming, and sort of any wins we get in the way of finding developing talent cheap this year are just going to make that bounce back all the more powerful. Last question before we let you go, Danny. It's the most important position in the draft to scout, I think, for the Seahawks right now. I say they can use their number one on a kicker. Who you got? Who you got to replace Blair Walsh?
I have no idea. I mean, I'm assuming they will probably pick up a guy or two in undrafted free agency. And then I don't know. I haven't even looked at who's like free agent right now. Like they have Justin Myers? Is that his name?
Jason Myers. Michael Myers. We've got Austin Powers on the roster.
Jason Myers, who I don't know anything about him.
He was with the Jags. He was cut. We might have been better off getting Jason Mendoza, another person formerly linked with the Jazz. I mean the Jags. Not Jazz. This is not a basketball podcast. One of our suggestions on a past show, he just got hurt now, but was Harry Kane. He'd be a pretty good kicker for the Seahawks, but as I said, he's pretty tied up in Europe, and he has
a Premier League guy?
Yeah.
I was racking my brain to be like, wait, who the hell was that? Oh, okay, I get it. It's a joke.
We're having fun. Yeah, we're having fun now. We've reached the fun part of the podcast, Danny. You can unbutton your shirt.
Just go for Zidane.
Something you were saying off the air that made me think about this at all was how low the hit rate is on those late round picks right now in the NFL, and that they should just throw a seventh at someone, like draft a guy just to make me feel good. Throw a seventh at a kicker.
I wouldn't be against it. Honestly, those seventh round picks are, well, in the way that I've always looked at them in the past, even sixth round picks, really, and you could make an argument about fifth round picks, but it's basically just getting in front of undrafted free agency and basically saying, you know, our roster is stronger at this position. So like we've seen them draft some late round running backs, some offensive linemen, and so like our roster is a little fuller at this position. We think it's gonna be harder to recruit undrafted free agents at this position because agents are going to look at us and be like, okay, you're going to have a hard time making the roster at this position. Therefore, the Seahawks go ahead and just like basically get a jump on undrafted free agency and pick the guy. So, so maybe they won't do that. Maybe they won't draft a kicker because they don't even have a kicker. Because if you're an undrafted free agent kicker, you're going to look at the Seahawks and be like, okay, so they just had the Blair Walsh, whatever you want to call it, a disaster experiment. And they have an opening, and there's going to be legitimate competition there. So I'm going to go there and try and prove myself and make the team.
Well, just occurred to me, we didn't turn over our special teams coaching, did we? With all the coaching.
No. No.
That's crazy.
The only ones that stayed, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, like, the Seahawks can go into, like, undrafted free agency and be like, yeah, you're the missing piece. Like, we were a kicker away from, like, making the playoffs and winning a couple games. Like, and just sell them on that. I think that that's how they get their mojo back in signing these undrafted guys.
So I'm just thinking, like, why would the Seahawks put so much emphasis or whatever on undrafted free agency? Maybe it has something to do with the fact that in reality, I've been kind of putting, like, running through this in my head the last couple of days, and basically just like, I'm coming kind of the opinion that maybe, like, no front office is actually really that good. Like, over a long enough period, is any front office actually good? Like, take out the Patriots.
Belichick. Yeah,
yeah, take out the Patriots. But I mean,
no, I mean, look at what the Ravens just did with Ryan Grant.
Yeah, look at the Ravens, who are replacing Ozzie, and he's had a couple of really questionable years. I mean, look at the Packers, who, you know, Ted Thompson was a guy who Seahawks fans revered for years, and he got replaced. And I think just, like, over a long enough time period, the league just, like, fucks over every front office, essentially, yeah. Right? Like, it's just really, really hard. They've done studies. I've seen studies where, you know, basically you just can't win consistently in the draft, like, more or less. I mean, obviously, this isn't totally true, but, like, the draft is a lot of luck. I mean, obviously, there's a ton of work to be done, and, like, evaluation is a real skill and all that, but with the way that the draft picks work, the way that you pick in the draft, like, high, low, I mean, it's just, it over a long enough time period, like, it's just really, really hard to hit on guys in the draft. So maybe it's just a numbers game. Like, Seahawks bring in 15, 20 undrafted free agents, like, the odds are better that you're going to hit on a couple of guys. So I don't know if it's just maybe, like, they're getting back to the numbers game, hoping that that numbers game thing will work for them, find guys that are really, really competitive that they think can improve and just coach them up. Because I just don't have, I mean, like we talked about offline, I just don't have that much faith in any, like, fourth, fifth, sixth round picks, like, panning out. Like, it's really, really rare for any of those picks to really pan out as a good, anything above, like, a serviceable replacement level player.
Yeah. I mean, the closest we've come on hitting on a late round pick in, like, the last 4 years is Chris Carson. And
yeah.
Otherwise, and that's at a, you know, it's, he was a legit hit at that position in the draft, but it's not a position of value. In the way that running backs aren't a position of value, that we don't need to get into that debate right now.
Are we going
to
do that right now?
Nope, we're not. We're gonna call it. Danny, thank you so much for coming on. You're at theringer.com. Anything else you should tell people who are listening to this and don't already follow you on Twitter, which seems improbable?
Well, you can follow me at Danny B. Kelly on Twitter. Yeah, follow my stuff at theringer.com. I'm on the Ringer podcast, not every week, but, you know, every other couple of weeks, and during the season I'm on there every week. So yeah, that's kind of the deal. We're going to look at, get a mock draft up there right now. And later this week, I'll have a, kind of going through history. Well, not history, but this century, and looking at some of the best defensive lines in the NFL too. So
that's exciting. Yeah. Clearly this year's Seahawks team won't be on there. Grant,
probably not.
You got anything you want to say before we go?
No. This is probably our longest show in a long time, so I just wanted to thank Danny for coming on and talking to us again, and thank the listener for sticking around this long into the episode.
Yeah, thank you guys. Leave a review, do all the internet podcast stuff, follow Grant on Twitter, follow me on Twitter, why not? And I'm not even going to say what our handles are. For the Locked On Seahawks podcast, I'm Spike Friedman signing off.
And I'm Grant Goldberg signing off. Thank you for tuning in.